us to assess the state of readiness by the IEC. So if they are not ready, we're all not ready as a country. It's not something that we can take for granted that we're ready until we are assured by the Commission that we are ready for elections. What had been bothering me is the issue of the Electoral Amendment Bill, which has not been referred to us. And I know that it is an important piece of legislation that has to be there before elections. And with us as a committee in the NCOP, this is our last week in Parliament. In fact, what the NCOP agreed with the NA not last year, 2016, is that we're not going to accept bills that will be referred to us after July. Reason being that we end up faltering in processing those bills because of the pressure that we have. But with, except if they are strategic, as they call them, strategic bills that we must, in our case, this is one of the bills that we must process before we go. But it has not been referred to us. I had an informal interaction with the chairperson of the portfolio committee to say that it is coming and it is urgent, but for us, until when it comes to us, that is only when we can start processing the bill. We tried to check earlier, we were informed that it will be going to the House NA tomorrow, Wednesday. But the question I always have, DM, is that why are we rushing now? Why this pressure? What happened? Where was the bill? Where were the delays? What were the issues? Because all members, even if we can have a briefing today, it's just an informal discussion. We'll only have a formal briefing once the bill is formally referred to us. But it's important to know what are the issues so that when it comes formally, at least we have some information which will assist us as a committee to fast-track the bill without faltering, of course, on the legal process of it. We still have to have 3 weeks for public hearing, which is 14 days official working days, which comes to 3 weeks. I don't know when will that 3 weeks start, because we don't have a bill as yet. I will then hand over to the Deputy Minister. Deputy Minister, it's up to you, really. It's all up to you whether you really want to present this bill informally, because even if you do it today, you still have to come back and do it formally or officially. Over to you. Maybe, I don't know whether we need the introductions, all members. Can we do that? All right. I'm Kathy Dlamini, the chairperson of the Select Committee on Social Services. As a committee, we're responsible for social services for 5 departments, plus 4 for education and recreation. That is Home Affairs, Department of Health, Social Development, Department of Water and Sanitation, which on my human segment. Honorable Samga.
Good morning, I'm Tindwe Samga, representing the Eastern Cape in the National Council of Provinces, the member of the committee that was mentioned by the chairperson. Thank you so much.
Good morning to everybody. I am Thandi Mpambo Sipukwana. I'm representing the Western Cape Province, and I am a member of all the mentioned departments by the Masami. Sorry. And I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Good morning, Chris Harting, Northwest Province. morning to the members, commissioners, and officials from the IEC, chairperson to yourself. My name is Fatima Chauhan, I'm the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Masego Shiburi. I'm the Deputy Chief Electoral Officer responsible for operations in the IEC.
I'm Sai Mamabolo, Chief Electoral Officer.
Good morning, Chairperson. I am the Vice Chairperson of the IEC and the Commissioner, and as such am here on behalf of the Commission.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Mosotu Moepia. I'm a Commissioner.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. My name is Natim Jemane. I'm a Parliamentary Legal Advisor. Thank you.
Morning, Chairperson. Mongameli Kweta from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
Chairperson, my name is Mozin Joko. I'm representing the Department of Home Affairs.
Hi, people at the back.
No, thank you very much for introductions.
My co-chair is Mr. Joko. Okay, he said that by so that he can see him. We don't see him now. Pardon, can't see him. So I want to see him.
No, thank you very much. I was about to say that some members are attending WIPARI this morning. Welcome, Honorable Mamporu. Can you introduce yourself?
Good morning, waiting my apologies for arriving late. I'll just have been office. I'm representing Limpopo Province and also the Week of the Committee, Kelebo.
Thank you very much. Our law advisors as well as the state law advisor will advise us later after the presentation by the department. You know my sense. I always say that I don't want to be made wrong. You know, we are not law specialists. You help us to do these things right. That is our take. Honorable Deputy Minister.
Chairperson, firstly, let me begin with an apology. I will need to leave at about 10:45 because we have an item at Cabinet Committee which I need to lead. The second issue, Chairperson, you requested a response from me as to whether, in fact, this briefing of the electoral amendment bill should happen today. My suggestion would be that it's always good, Chairperson, to take the briefing, notwithstanding the fact that the National Assembly will only debate the bill. You said tomorrow. I'm just trying to make sure that that is the case, because my understanding was that it was going to be debated on Thursday. But you may be right. There may have been changes. We did ask that this bill be prioritized, and I'm sure that the programming groups are looking at that issue. This bill will have to be passed this year, Chairperson, so that the IEC can do whatever it needs to do in preparation for the elections. Otherwise, that means that Parliament will have to come back earlier next year to do that. And I don't think that there are those plans, because I think all of the political parties would want to ensure that they have sufficient time to do whatever it is that they do in constituencies and so on. But we will discuss that at those forums of the WIPRI chairperson, because it doesn't help that we discuss that in the select committee. My suggestion is that we continue with the briefing, and then, of course, when it is formally tabled at the NCOP, you already have a sense of what the issues are and so on. If you then want another briefing, we certainly will be able to arrange that. I won't be doing the briefing, of course. The IEC, as usual, will be doing the briefing together with the briefing on the preparations for the 2019 national and provincial elections. So with your permission, perhaps we should hand over to them.
Okay, before that, I ask the question, why are we rushing now? Why now? Where were the delays? We all knew that this bill was coming. Why are we rushing now? If we have to, it have to be processed this year, like I was saying earlier, we're supposed to be, this is our last week as the NCOP according to our formal program. I don't know what will come out of the WIPRI meeting because it guides us in terms of our program. Okay, I'll give her an opportunity.
Thank you very much, Chair. We got a communication while we're still at home about the introduction of the bill. It is said that the NA will be adopting the bill on Thursday. Then, by the look of things, we cannot rubber stamp. The NCOP will continue with the bill once the chairperson of the council has handed over the bill to the committee. It means we'll extend up to where we are supposed to adopt the bill. The proper arrangements will be done. You'll be communicated.
Okay. Where were the delays?
Chairperson, several delays occurred at the time that the bill was being tagged, certified, not tagged, certified by the state law advisors' offices. We understood that there was some material issue at the time that the state law advisors had wanted to see included in the legislation. Ours was not a material disagreement necessarily, but the certification of the legislation was then delayed because the understanding, I think, or the misunderstanding was that the state law advisors wanted us to issue another bill including their suggestions, which would have caused problems. As you know, when you change a bill that has already gone to cabinet, you have to take it back to cabinet. And we didn't want to do that. So there was that inordinate delay, unfortunately, at the time that it was being awaited by the portfolio committee. So that delay, unfortunately, has taken us beyond the parliamentary scheduled program, for which all of us apologize and so on. But unfortunately, there was that delay. Having said so, Chairperson, I'm very pleased to tell you that as we sit now, there are no material disagreements, my understanding. And so it should be a relatively more easy process in the NCOP.
So,
Madam,
you want to say something? We are all rushing now. What we're not going to do is to try our best,
almost best, to make sure, because we know the importance of the bill. Without this bill, there are no elections. That we know. But at the same time, we'll not rubber stamp. That will not do. We'll follow all the legal requirements of the committee to do. I think one thing that will delay us is the issue of public hearing, like I was saying earlier, which will take us 3 weeks. As you were busy with your deliberation and comment the notion of the bill, did you anticipate that you come to this pressure now, which is in Parliament, especially the NCOP, both houses? Because really, even in the NA, as I was talking to the chairperson, he was still waiting at the time when we spoke about the bill, because we all knew that it was coming. Did you anticipate that it will come to this? And what were the plans? Because, you know, we can't break some of the processes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, as the Office of the Chief Steward, State Law Advisors, our role is to certify bills as to their constitutionality. Chair, we know for a fact that the Bills Office of Parliament issued a notice that by April of this year, all bills that were going to be passed during this parliamentary dispensation should be submitted to Parliament by April of this year, Chair. Therefore, Chair, we received, I'm not sure about the specific dates when we received the initial draft of the bill. Our officers, personally, I was not involved in that. But, Chair, the issues that I recall that were raised by, that was raised by our office was the issue of the court judgment, Chair. That was the issue that was of concern, Chair. Whether the bill is not an attempt to circumvent the court order, the constitutional court order that instructed the department to compile all the addresses of voters in the voters' roll. So the major issue that we raised with the department, with the department and the IEC, Chair. But Chair, the final draft for our certification of the bill we received around September, which we went through, and we also even issued legal opinions to the IEC and the department, Chair, as to whether the bill will be constitutional, Chair, in the light of the Constitutional Court judgment. Therefore, Chair, we did certify the bill, Chair, I think it was around September, Chair. But Chair, the issue of delays, Chair, we are not sure, Chair, that the Office of Chief Legal Advisor, Chair, will be the one that will be really delaying the processes, Chair, because our role, Chair, before the bill comes to Parliament, our primary role is to make sure a bill that comes to Parliament is constitutional, Chair. There are no other issues that may creep up during the parliamentary processes, and challenges could come from outside as to the constitutionality of the bill, Chair. It was not our intention to delay the parliamentary processes, Chair. Our issue was to make sure that the bill is constitutional and Parliament passes the bill that is not going to be challenged in future, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. I'm not sure who's presenting.
If I could just begin with a very short overview, and then I think our CEO will take you through the clause-by-clause parts of the bill. There is a presentation that I think all members have received copies of. But I think that the key issues in relation to the bill, and I just wanted to start off with addressing this question about the issue relating to the court judgment. You will see in the clauses of the bill, as the CEO takes you through them, that in fact the bill is designed in part to ensure that we fulfill the requirements of that court judge to the fullest, as opposed to in any way avoiding them. As you know, the court in its decision has concluded that a person on the one hand without an address cannot be disenfranchised, but at the same time, on the other hand, a person who votes must be voting with an address so that one can ascertain that that person is voting in the right place, and secondly, so that political parties have the possibility to campaign. Now, in order to ensure that these two things are matched, we have, with the engagement of the party liaison committee at national, provincial, and even at local levels, since that judgment, been instituting procedures to ensure that people's addresses are required before they go and cast their votes. But in doing that, we are mindful of the fact that in our legislation, we need to secure that process very concretely in the legislation. So that our that particular amendment is designed, in fact, to do that, to secure that process. So that if somebody appears at a voting station, there is an opportunity both for processes and verification to make sure that that person is indeed voting at the right place, which of course is much more intensive when it comes to local elections, but it's still obviously relevant in provincial elections, but also that there's a procedure whereby that person's ability to vote is not compromised. So we have, in putting forward this amendment, on the one hand wanted to secure that process, but also I just wish to reassure the members of the Select Committee that this is something that we have included as a measure that we have taken in our court papers to the Constitutional Court. So it's not something that is being done, you know, outside of that process, but is indeed an integral part of that process. I think that that's the one thing. I think that there are various details that I'm going to ask our CEO to go through the presentation, and then of course we are very available for questions now. And Chairperson, I just wanted to reassure you that should there be any part of this process that we can assist with going forward, we are continuously at your disposal because we, as you rightly say, are concerned about ensuring that this passage of this legislation happens as seamlessly as possible.
Thank you, Vice Chairperson, Chairperson of the Committee, Deputy Minister, and members of the Select Committee. The bill amends three pieces of legislation. The Electoral Commission Act, which really deals with the appointment, terms of the appointment of commissioners, the appointment of the chief electoral officer, as well as the party registration. So that's the component of the Electoral Commission Act. It also amends the Electoral Act. The Electoral Act largely deals with national and provincial elections, but more importantly, it has provisions relating to the voter's role and its preparation ahead of elections. As well as the nomination of candidates in respect of national and provincial elections. And lastly, this bill also amends the Municipal Electoral Act, which is an act that regulates the conduct and management of elections in the local sphere of government. And the reason why we are amending both the Electoral Act and the Municipal Electoral Act is to ensure that we have parity of provisions between the two acts, to the extent that the context makes that possible. So the outline of the presentation is as follows. We'll look at the objects of the bill. We'll then look at the each clause, the organizational implications, financial implications, and so on and so on.
Now, in respect of the Electoral Commission Act, just at a high level, we deal with the use of all available information and making it possible for the Commission to use such information in the compilation and maintenance of the voter's roll. We also amend the Act to provide for the electronic submissions of party registration applications. We are amending the Electoral Commission Act to provide for the exclusive jurisdiction of the Electoral Court to adjudicate intra-party disputes that have a bearing on the preparations of elections. We also amending the Commission Act to provide for the prohibition of the use of the name, acronyms, logos and designs and electoral material owned by the Commission within an electoral context. As regards the Electoral Act, we are revising the existing provisions relating to voter registration, voters' rolls, voting districts, wards, as well as a varied voting procedure for persons for whom we still do not have an address. We are also amending the Act to regulate the publication of an objection to a provisionally compiled voter's roll. This bill is providing for a structured period in terms of the election timetable to publish a provisionally compiled voter's roll to allow a period of objections as well as a period for the Commission to consider those objections before the voter's roll is eventually certified. To clarify that the election timetable may include any matter authorized in terms of the Electoral Act, and that the voter's roll to be used in an election is one that is certified by the Chief Electoral Officer for an election. And clarify that the cut-off date for the registration of voters for any upcoming election is the date on which that election is legally proclaimed by a competent authority. Then we are further amending the Electoral Act to provide for the Chief Electoral Officer to notify the relevant parties where a candidate's name appears on multiple party lists and to afford such parties an opportunity to substitute that candidate and reorder their party list should they elect to do so. To repeal the requirement that the identity document of the voter must be stamped as part of proving that they had voted in the election, and to provide for a varied voting procedure for voters for whom the Commission does not have an address on the roll. Then to provide for the circumstances under which an agent may object to a voter whose name appears on a voter's roll for the voting district in which the voting station is located, and to limit the class of persons for whom who may apply for accreditation to provide voter education, limiting that only to juristic persons and removing natural persons. To align the provision regarding the circumstances in which new ballot papers may be issued to voters with the provisions of the Municipal Electoral Act. Pertinently, in the Municipal Electoral Act, if a voter decides that they no longer wish to vote for the party for whom they've crossed the ballot, but before they deposit them into the box, they may request the presiding officer to give them new ballot papers, and so on. So we are introducing parity between the two acts. Now, most of the provisions
of the bill that amends the Municipal Electoral Act are almost identical with those of the Electoral Act, precisely because, as I indicated, we want to ensure that in both statutes we have parity. So the first is to regulate the publication of objections to a provisionally compiled voter's roll in order to establish a structured process of resolving these objections without jeopardizing the preparation of elections. To provide for the prohibition of the use of public funds to fund party political campaigns other than those that are appropriated for this purpose in terms of the represented political parties fund. Now, if we then go to each clause of the bill, clause 1 of the bill amends section 5 of the Electoral Commission Act to clarify that the Commission may use all available sources of data to obtain information necessary to compile and maintain the National Common Voters Roll. In other words, this authorizes the Commission, even in instances where it does not, where the Commission does not have address details, if it can procure those from other sources, that this would make it possible. And this will be additional to details provided by the voter. So in a sense, this provision is giving meaning to the Constitutional Court judgment on addresses and making, opening the avenues which the Commission may exploit in procuring addresses. And clause 2 amends section 15 of the Electoral Commission Act to authorize the Commission to regulate the application procedure for the registration of parties to contest national and provincial elections. And this envisaged procedure may include electronic submission of application documents. Currently, the process to apply for party registration is manual, and the Commission is of the view that technologies now exist which may make it possible for prospective political parties to submit their applications electronically. I mean, for purposes of a national registration of a party, you need 500 signatures, and they have to be processed one by one. Now technology offers the possibility to do this seamlessly. The same in clause 3 of the bill, amend section 15 capital A of the Commission Act, is a same provision, but in relation to municipal elections. Because you may either register at the national level or at the municipal level. Clause 4 amends section 20 of the Electoral Commission Act by inserting a new subsection, 2 capital A, to empower the Electoral Court to hear and determine any disputes relating to the constitution and founding instruments, membership, leadership of any party registered in terms of the Electoral Commission Act. This is important because we are having difficulties with ongoing internal party disputes which are not resolved, which render it impossible to determine who the authentic leadership is for purposes of submitting list of candidates, and therefore delay the printing of ballot papers, and so on, and so on, and so on. And then clause 5 of the bill inserts a new section, 21 capital A, into the Electoral Commission Act to provide for the prohibition in the context of elections of the use of the name, acronym, logo, designs, and material owned, used or owned by the Commission. this is intended to obviate situations where the name of the organization is used wrongfully in a manner that is not authorized, and therefore create irreparable reputational damage to the institution in circumstances where the commission itself is not involved. You have an IEC running an election somewhere when in fact it's not the electoral commission and so on. Clause 6 now tackles, from clause 6 we are tackling amendments to the Electoral Act. So in clause 6 we are revising section 7 of the Act, of the Electoral Act, to empower the commission to make regulations regarding the application procedure for registration as a voter. And this may include in future possibly allowing some kind of electronic application which is then validated by appearance before an official of the commission. Clause 7, amend section 8 of the Act to make provision for a voter to be registered on the segments of the voter's roll for a voting district of his or her choice within the ward where he or she is ordinarily resident. This, I think, is critical. Currently, you may only register in the voting district in which you are ordinarily resident. But a voting district is an administrative entity. It's an administrative geographic entity. The political entity is a ward. It's a ward. So all the commission is proposing is that let's open it up. A voter may register in any voting district within the ward. But once voters have done so, they will have to go and vote at that voting district where they registered. They can't go to any station in the ward. You may only appear once on the voter's roll, and that will be at the voting district where you registered. But we're opening it up, giving people a choice to go to any voting district within the ward. Clause 8 amends section 11 of the Electoral Act to deal with the consequence of amending clause 7. So it just follows the natural consequence of the amendment to clause 7. Clause 9 amends section 20 of the Electoral Act to clarify that the election timetable may include any matter authorized in terms of the Electoral Act. The Electoral Table is currently a schedule to the Act, and it has elements which are prescribed, which have to be part of the timetable as a pro forma. Now, this new provision made provision that the Commission may include any additional matter that is authorized in terms of the Electoral Act itself. If something were to emerge that is not part of the pro forma, but which is necessary for purposes of free and fair elections to regulate in terms of the timetable, that possibility is created by this clause 9. Clause 10 revises section 24 of the Electoral Act to clarify that the voter's roll to be used in an election must be the one certified by the chief electoral officer. Because there will be different iterations of the roll in preparation for elections, but the one that will finally be used on election day is one that is certified. That is the current practice, but we are codifying that practice. And clause 10 further makes provision to clarify that the cutoff date for registration for an upcoming election must be on the date of proclamation. Again, it's a current practice which is being codified. And clause 11 amends section 28 of the Electoral Act in order to deal with a technical amendment by making reference to the specific provisions of section 27 that the Chief Electoral Officer must notify any party of its non-compliance therewith. Section 27 relates to the nomination documents that must be submitted as well as the deposit. Now, the amendment that is being proposed here is that the Chief Electoral Officer can notify the party of the missing documents, be they a nomination document, a acceptance of nomination by a candidate, an ID document, and so on. But that specifically excludes the election deposit. In other words, the election deposit has to be paid on the date on which nominations close. So you can't rectify non-compliance in respect of the election deposit. So it must be paid on the date on which we close. Now, clause 11 further introduces a requirement for the Chief Electoral Officer to notify the relevant parties where a candidate's name appears on multiple party lists and to afford such parties an opportunity to substitute that candidate and reorder the list. I mean, it does happen that a candidate is on party list for this party and for the other party and for the party. Now, I'm told by those who studied economics that it's called hedging. You're hedging your chances, and it does happen. So when that happens, it's the duty of the Chief Electoral Officer to notify the parties that Mama Wolo is on your list or is on several lists. Clause 12 amends Section 38 of the Electoral Act by deleting of 5A, capital A, which requires that the identity document of the voter must be stamped. The department 2 months ago or so indicated that there are close to 9 million smart ID cards in circulation. So we can't stamp them. For I think we'll be defacing them. So that requirement is being removed because it has been rendered nugatory by that introduction of smart cards. Clause 13 inserts section 38 capital A, and it provides for a varied voting procedure for voters whose names appear on the voter's roll without addresses. This is one issue that really has been contentious between ourselves, within ourselves and the institution, the department, the state law advisor, to the extent that the question was asked, are we introducing this in order to obviate compliance with the judgment of the Constitutional Court in Krobe. The position of the Commission has been that Mkhlophe did not remove the voting rights of voters for whom we don't have addresses. But what Mkhlophe judgment did was to ensure that those voters, on the one hand, we need to find a way of getting their addresses before they vote and ensuring that they are registered in the correct segment of the voter's roll. Now, the Commission's view was then create a voting procedure where those voters finish an address before they vote and make a determination whether that address locates them in the correct segment of the voter's roll. So the current formulation of Section 38, capital A, is that if, for whatever reason, you are unable to finish an address you can vote on a national level because the country, the Republic, is one national constituency. But to the extent that we are unable to determine the province in which you are ordinarily resident, then you can't vote on the provincial ballot. But if you finish an address, a proper address, and you are able to make a determination as to which province you are ordinarily resident, then you will receive vote. Then we will capture those addresses going forward, because on election day, that's the date on which we meet the most voters as the commission. In 2014, we were visited by 18.2 million voters. So we hope that this 1.6 million voters for whom we still do not have addresses will come and will then be in a position to collect their addresses on the day. Now, I think it's important that members of the committee and the chair that we also report that we had asked the Constitutional Court for an extension of the period of the suspension of the period of the declaration of invalidity. Now, the Concord delivered judgment last week, Thursday. And the key elements of that order are the following. That the period of suspension is extended until 30 November 2019. That the commission must not allow voters without addresses to vote without first giving an address. So, in a sense, what the court says here accords with what we had wanted to achieve, which is that before those voters vote, let them finish addresses. And that we need to mark the voters' roll to indicate which are voters for whom we have a complete address, those for whom we have an incomplete address, and those for whom we don't have anything. And that we need to file reports to the Constitutional Court on a two-monthly basis starting on the 31st of January next year. I think in the main, that's the nub of the judgment. There were eight judges sitting. The majority decision is that with six, and there were two dissenting judges who had, I believe, have written an interesting judgment. But I think that's for another conversation. So in a sense, what the Concord ordered and what we had anticipated by introducing Section 38, capital A, are in consonance. And Clause 14 amends Section 40 of the Electoral Act to align circumstances under which a voter may be issued a new ballot paper, and to align that with 49 of the Municipal Act. 15, amend Section 41 of the Electoral Act in order to provide for circumstances under which an agent may object to a voter whose name appears on the segment of the roll for the voting district in which the station is located. I think this is important because we will have a structured period in the timetable to publish a provisionally compiled voter's roll and allow for a period of objections. And only once those objections have been determined by the commission, certify the roll. So it's important that the voting stations' objections, they are limited to where fraud is alleged. So that's what this and the subsequent clause deals with. And then clause 16 amends section 86 of the Electoral Act in order to limit the class of persons who may apply for accreditation to provide voter education for an election to juridic persons, you know, NGOs, whoever, groups, institutions and so on, but not natural persons. Now, clause 17 amends the electoral to prohibit the use of public funds except those allocated to a party in terms of the act for purposes of their political campaign. Clause 18 amends the Schedule 1, which is the election timetable, to provide for additional compulsory steps to be observed in preparing for election. And these steps relate to the publication of a provisionally compiled voter's roll, as well as providing a period of objections and for the determination of those objections by the Commission. This measure will allow parties and members of the public to have an opportunity to object to the roll and to allow for the orderly determination of those objections prior to the certification of the rolls. Now we turn to the Municipal Electoral Act. And again, as I indicated earlier, these are mirror provisions, basically. These are mirror provisions to the amendment to the Electoral Act. Clause 20 amends section 11 of the Municipal Act in order to clarify that the election timetable may include any matter authorized in terms of the Act. 21 deals with the amendment to section 51 to provide for the circumstances under which an agent may object to a voter whose name appears on a segment of the roll for the voting district in which the station is situated, and the recording of the decision regarding that and the treatment of that objection as a special vote. Clause 22 is the mirror provision of the Electoral Act relating to the use of public funds. We have dealt with that. And clause 23 then amends Schedule 3 of the Municipal Electoral Act to provide for additional compulsory steps to be observed in preparing for a municipal election. Furthermore, just to indicate that these steps relate to the publication of a provisionally compiled roll to allow parties and members of the public to have an opportunity to object to the law and to allow for the orderly determination of those objections prior to certification. And clause 24 deals with the short title and the commencement of the Act. There are no additional personnel implications as a result of the introduction of the bill. Most of the amendments proposed by this bill relate to normal voting stations and electoral operations, and for this reason the financial implications thereof have already been taken account of when the budget of the election was prepared. There are no additional communication implications as a result of the bill. Everything else related to the registration of voters will be carried in terms of our normal communication campaign. The bill then gives effect to section 1D, 19, 46, 1, 105, 1, and 157 of the Constitution of the Republic. And the National Party Liaison has been consulted on the bill. And that is the bill, Chair, Vice Chair, and members of the committee.
No, thank you very much.
Well, members, there is another presentation just to indicate that besides the bill, are you ready to hold elections? Can we take that presentation then when engage on both presentations?
Thank you, Chairperson. We will move with speed, but still give the relevant details. Let's start with the obvious, that is, the term of Parliament is determined for 5 years, and the 5 years is reckoned from the date of the last election. We all know that the elections in 2014 were held on the 7th of May. That indicates that this term, the term of this Parliament will end on the 6th of May 2019. The Constitution further instructs that within 90 days of the 6th of May, an election must be held. So an election can be held earlier 6th of May and second week in August 2019. While the President has a prerogative to determine an election date, the window period is determined. He can't choose a date outside of that window period. The President is also on record having stated that an election will be held sometime in May. Constitutionally, we must stand ready to deliver an election at the earliest possible date. The first Wednesday in May will be on the 8th. The first Wednesday within the window period will be the 8th of May. So all our plans are geared toward being ready to deliver an election on the 8th of May should the President call an election on that day. This slide just gives the high-level planning milestones. The first one relates to the final registration opportunity, which will be organized over the weekend of the 26th and 27th of January. Closely linked to that registration weekend will be an opportunity for prisoners to register. That will be a week just before the registration weekend. Similarly, there will be an opportunity for South Africans who are abroad to be able to register as voters at embassies and South African missions overseas. Close to the registration weekend, we will also run a number of targeted initiatives to deal with wards or voting districts of low voter registration, and also in February, once post-matric institutions have settled, to go and target universities, TVET colleges, and the type of those colleges, because we anticipate that in some provinces there will be a net influx of new students arriving in those provinces for the first time. The proclamation date, on that day, the voters' roll closes for this election, and we will have a period of inspection where we lay the voters' roll open for inspection. Political parties can raise objections on the inclusion or exclusion of persons on those segments of the voters' roll. And once certified, there can never be any opportunity for parties or persons to raise objections against a person being on a segment of the voters' roll once it is certified. That is purposeful to allow for an organized administration of result of an election. Candidate nomination will follow thereafter. I will then hold a draw to determine which party will get the coveted slot on top of the ballot paper. And as we had said, there will be an election in May. Yeah. This slide, Chair, summarizes the national footprint of our voting district. The network of voting stations has increased with each election. However, increasingly, it is no longer desirable to split voting districts to accommodate for growth in population, because over time people create an identity with the voting station. So if you change its boundaries with each election, you will just cause confusion among the voting public. So what we have done increasingly is to introduce the concept of a voting center, where we treat a single voting station and administer it as though it were multiple voting stations. These are typically in high density areas or metropolitan municipalities, where you find that you have a lot of densities in a very small area. A case in point will be a voting station in Joburg Park with 15,000 people registered against that voting district. It is both a voting district and a ward. It is not possible to further split that voting district. So in those instances, if it's a school, you will run multiple classes as if they were independent voting stations. So you take the voter's roll and split it into manageable segments. So people vote in one class, the counting happens in that class, and we aggregate the count and issue a result for the station. We do that to occasion convenience on the part of a voter, so that people don't stand in long queues, people don't spend inordinate time in voting station for purposes of casting a vote. The size just illustrates that in this election, if you compare the network of voting stations in 2016 and the network of voting stations this year, there has been a marginal increase because we have opted to institutionalize convenience where voters are located. This slide just gives a breakdown of the new voting districts that we are creating. KZN leads at 116, followed by the Eastern Cape and Gauteng at 67. This slide demonstrates the reality of increasing densities, especially, as we said, in metropolitan municipalities and secondary cities. The red bar is the number of substreams that are incubated within what we call a voting center. So in Gauteng, for example, you have 1,506 voting stations that are voting centers. What that means is that in those stations, we looked at them, it was not desirable to further split those voting stations. So we've accommodated the large voters' roll as they were by creating a number of streams that we enforce it. So when you go to those stations on election day, you'll have a streaming. Either the first 1,000 people, or it will be alphabetical, will go to one facility, the next 2,000 will go to a different facility. This typically will obtain in areas of high densities, which coincides with metropolitan municipalities. This slide compares the registered persons on the voter's roll against what Stats SA estimates to be the number of people in each of the provinces. Stats SA estimates that there are 35 million South Africans who are age eligible, meaning 18 years and above. Of those, we have 26.1 registered as voters, and the difference represents the gap between age eligible South Africans and those who are registered as voters. And you'll see that while in provinces like the Eastern Cape and the Free State, we are in the 80s, there are other provinces that are still lagging behind. Mpumalanga stands out, similarly Gauteng stands out as some of the provinces with the biggest gap between age-eligible citizens and those who are registered as voters. Thank you. I pause to restate a few things on this slide. We'll recall that when the Constitutional Court made its judgment in 2016, there were only about 34% of voters who appeared on the voter's roll with an address. Fast forward 2 years, as we speak now, we can report that we have 82% of voters on the voter's roll with an address. it is, I think, a quantum improvement in by any yardstick. But having said that, there are pockets that still require our attention, as it will be further evident from the following slides. These slides break down the number of people for whom we do not have an address. As you know, in the judgment in 2016, the court said the obligation to maintain addresses on the voter's roll doesn't go back beyond December 2003. So by December 2003, there were about 770 people for whom we did not have an address. As an institution, we're treating both categories of voters the same, because no address on the voter's roll has the same impact whether that situation arose before December 2003 or post-December 2003. So these are the figures of people for whom we do not have an address on the voter's roll. The next slides are telling, and they say a lot in a graphic way. And we're using two slides just to illustrate the progress made. On the 31st July. The first slide gives you is a snapshot taken at a particular point on the 31st of July 2018. And here, best performance will be indicated by the lighter green shade. Municipalities that are red indicate that we are in trouble as it relates to addresses. The address situation is most pronounced in those municipalities that are red, pinkish, and purple. And you see there in July 2018, there were three municipalities that stood out in the Free State. Fast forward a few months later to the end of October. The slide paints or tracks improvement that has been made in the intervening period. The red blots in the Free State have disappeared, which indicates the progress that has been made in those few months to improve the address situation as it relates to voters for whom we do not have an address. The next slide, again, is a time in point on the 31st of July 2018. Here you want as much as the dark green color to appear on all municipalities in the province. You'll notice here that at the end of July, the municipalities in which we had most completed address were in the Northern Cape, Cape Town, and parts of the Northwest. Fast forward to the end of October, the country is getting green. It is not a rainforest, it's just tracking the improvement that have been made as it relates to the address situation. However, even with these strides, there remains areas of concern, as will be apparent from these two slides that follow. This slide talks to potentially incomplete addresses, meaning we have an entry on the voter's roll, but it doesn't meet a strict sense of an address. We accept that some of them may be a proper, complete address, as best as an address as we'll ever find in those social settings. In July 2018, instances of incomplete addresses were most pronounced in Limpopo, the Eastern Cape, and parts of KZN. Fast forward to 21st October 2018. We have made progress, but the three provinces still stubbornly remain. And the import of this is that it paints a picture of our history and edifice of development that we had unequal development. There were areas that were formalized, properly serviced, where people had proper addresses, township properly proclaimed. So this is the legacy of our development. And this is an area with which we assist with to make further inroads in improving the address situations in those three provinces. The next slide indicates the investment that we have made with respect to human capacity to reach out to citizens. On this slide, we account for the resources that we've placed in each of our provinces to assist us to communicate a message to citizens and also reach out to citizens to animate people enough to want to remain connected with the democracy project. So these are the people who are responsible for civic democracy education and closer to the election for balloting education. We all are aware that consistent with the rest of sub-Saharan Africa, we are increasingly a young population. So out of necessity, our communication campaign must speak to that cohort of citizens in a manner and platforms in which they prefer to receive information. Our campaign will focus on social and digital media, will however maintain the traditional media so that we don't lose the traditional voters that we already have on the voters' roll. Radio, based on our research, continues to be a primary source for people to receive information. There's television in the mix, including the use increasingly of community radio. The campaign will be supported by a contact center that people can call and get assistance and information in all the official languages. There will be posters for profiling the registration period, billboards, as well as educational content on some of the SABC platforms. So this relates to the efforts that we're making to animate people to register as voters and those who are registered to continue to participate in the electoral process, but more importantly, for those for whom we do not have an address, to make themselves, to avail themselves to the measures that we've put in place to provide an address, either by going to a voting station or those who are already registered to go on any of our social platforms or on our website to provide an address without having to visit a voting station. During each election, we bolster and supplement our human capacity. So these are the people that we employed in all of the provinces to support the delivery of elections. In the era of technology, we are looking at hardware and software to occasion improvements, but more importantly, to ensure that where there are risks of attack, we can repel those, but where we fail, we can still be able to reconstruct and issue the results in as short a period as is possible. So the technology updates for political parties will relate to an opportunity that will be provided to political parties to examine and test the result system. This is a practice that we've had historically where parties are given access to a result system. They can bring their specialists and experts to test the system for any glitches, and once that period has passed, we lock the system in readiness for an election. We will also get external sources to do and subject the result system to integrity test. In conclusion, Chairperson, the presentation sought to demonstrate that an election arises out of a number of factors. The first one is that it is a legally defined process. So legal certainty will be overemphasized, and hence the need to obtain clarity on the measures that we propose to safeguard the right of those South Africans who are registered as voters for whom we still do not have an address. Secondly, is that an election arises out of a logistical undertaking of significant proportion. In this regard, we confirm that we are on track with both our logistics and infrastructure to support the election. We've procured all material for the registration weekend. We will be shortly receiving materials for the registration drive for the election day. We finalize contracting for voting stations, and we have all the materials at the ready. It is also an involved administrative exercise. In this regard, we can confirm that we have recruited the requisite caliber of people to manage those voting stations. We have begun with the training of those cohort of people who will be managing voting stations, and also we will be presenting the names of people that we are going to use as managers in voting stations to political parties, so that political parties can object if we're placing any person who's unsuitable at a voting station, either because they are proven to be partisan or whether they do not possess the requisite level of maturity to manage a voting station. The last point to be made, Chair, is that an election is about people. We want to increase the number of people who are registered as voters. In other words, to close the gap between the age-eligible citizens and those who are registered as voters. But more importantly is that everyone who leaves a voting station must feel that their citizenship rights, their personhood, has been validated by them being in contact with the Electoral Commission. So that speaks to the caliber of people that we put at voting stations, people who have an orientation to service people with respect and with dignity and to do the right things at all of the voting stations. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Chairperson and members, particularly given that I know that you've fitted this in a difficult, pressurized time. But I think that what we hope by this last presentation to do is to also give you a sense, and obviously it might then help you in your work back in your respective constituencies, you know, whether it's the Western, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, wherever, because you can see that the disaggregation of information can give quite a rich set of pieces of information for you to be able also to engage, to help us to ensure that we increase the percentage of people who do turn up to register, that we increase the percentage of people with complete addresses, and obviously people who vote. We're open to any questions today, but also obviously at a later stage should you need us to come back.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, two presentations made, one on the bill and the second one on the stage of readiness. Honourable Hutchins was the first, Honourable Mpambo Spokwana, Honourable Samka, Honourable Mampuru. Can I take those and I'll come back if members still want to input.
Chair, thank you for the presentation. I just want to understand, and I understand the context where we come from very expensive court cases where the IEC had to pay also a lot of other parties' costs. A thing that I don't understand, and it was stated that the order stated that if a person wants to vote, they will be compelled, is that the way I understand it, to provide address there and then. I don't find that actually in the court order. I would like to know what's the basis of that. What happened then if a person refuses to provide an address, is on the voter's roll, or she is on the voter's roll, refused to now fill in a form to provide an address there. I don't find it in the court order of the 22nd of November. If I can, it impacts actually on both sides of the readiness. And then just other another aspect on the readiness. Millions have now been expended and will be expended on the address issue to get that, and a lot of initiatives went into that. But I have found, and this comes down to election day and the training of officials in the VD, where like we've seen in the August 2012 to early 2013 Tlokwe situation, party agents were refused access to view the actual ID document and to verify, to see without interfering, to see that that person actually, the photo matches the face and that ID number appears on the voter, that check. They were in many instances parked in a corner and then threatened to be removed if they would say, for instance, stand behind the IEC official to check this. And now I've not seen that this has been significantly changed all over. Some places still happen, and then it goes into a confrontation situation. Now, this aspect led to a situation in the Tlokwe by-elections where people were bussed in from all over other districts. It's called in the court documents, but most notably from across the border in the Free State. And they were handed ID documents on arrival, and party agents could not check or verify the three aspects: face, ID document, and voter's roll. I would like to know, is this being addressed? Because we can spend millions and millions on this, but if that process fails, then everything was fruitless.
Okay, two issues.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add on the Constitutional Court ruling in terms of addresses, I want to talk about the informal settlement.
What is happening then? The movement. We are in a formal meeting.
Proceed,
Honourable
Palmer, not you. Okay.
The gentleman was
speaking, Honourable Hutchins,
but I don't have a problem with
that, but I don't want to be disrupted. Okay, yeah. Okay. Honourable Chair, I just want to talk about the informal settlement. In the informal settlement, as Umhlalwa lapha in Western Cape, I want to make an example. A Khayelitsha, we informal settlement, ufumana abantu abahlala eGedongweni, ufumane abantu abahlala ezimbacini. And then noma niyandiva abantu akwethu. Abantu abahlala ezimbacini abanazi address. You go today and you go tomorrow, 300 more informal shacks have been erected. Within the day, because overnight 300 people have been dropped by buses. And I said last time you were here, Esaldan, which used to be my constituent, Esaldan, you go, as you come in Ward 9 into Saldan, I'm going to be aphela apha namhlanje, tomorrow aphele apha. What are you doing? Deciding the lay in Bendulango. The same thing, Kaufika Kailisha. Kaufika go TR. I'm a take your mapel up and I'm French. Kaufika go V, a pelle up. What are you doing about that? And the constitutional court ruling, we take you on a lady address. And what Nikoven I for Senana na pelle lap. Lendo, ye refugee, yes, Zimbabwe, refugees, yes, Zimbabwe, because I equate at least. And other band, but Basuka is thinking, Bazofuna is better living conditions up, Baza is better, Nendo isn't those without colors for one, and Bafuna and the RDPs, but that you can't force
them. The constitution, it freedom of movement. You can't force them. Abanye baze kwifemeli, abanye but better schooling, then don't baze. They've got a right to come here. But I want to know who nenze ntoni ngalo. Okwesibini, Chairperson. Yonke le nto ithethwa apha iza ngesingesi. Aba bantu bazavota ndifuna ukuqonda into yokuba ivenetula le nibacacisele i-different nguni languages ezi-11 kuzo zonke ii-provinces ngenkqubo eza kuthathwa ukuba bona ii-voters niyenzile umpapasho nangena door to door, not as politicians but as IEC naya ebantwini kwenzela into yoba nithethe ngolwimi labo because abayiva le English, ikhumshile le English, yiyo le nto ndingayaziyo namthetha isiXhosa. Ndiyazi English. Nikhumshile apha, nifikelele ebantwini nehla. Ndifuna ukuqonda uba invelethula niaccommodatile abatswana, amaXhosa, amapedi, yinto ngokubafundisa ngenkqubo. Ndiyayazi uba niyenzile, ndifuna ukuqonda uba nenze ntoni na. Enkosi Chairperson.
Honorable Sanka.
Enkosi Sihlalo, mandibulele ii-presentation ezimbini from ku-IEC. She, kwi-previous election, kunelungelo lokuvota. Makandithethe nge-Eastern Cape apho ndisuka khona njengamntu osuka phaa i-Eastern Cape ubukwazi into okokuba urejistarishile ku-IEC uaphiyerishe kwi-voters roll. Ndinako ukuhamba ndiyovota eMount Elif ndinikwe i-form kanti ndikwasesisikisiki. Kwezi elections ikhona naloo nyoba iza kwenzeka na because andivanga kakuhle kule nto okukhumsha kwenike kakhulu. Andivanga kakuhle uba ujonge kule map kupheji kule 31st of October 2018 imap le fumanisa uba i-Eastern Cape ivela isenayo le challenge ye-incomplete addresses. Now ndisuka ke far east e-Eastern Cape olu sikisiki xa usiyangasekwangakwazi njemnatala abantu baphayo phayo into yoba bahlala ezilalini. Ingaba xa kusithiwa thetha ngeaddress kuthethwa ngebhokisi ngepost or sithetha nge-administrative area. I'm staying in the area of Nyosana administrative area. Xa sirejistarisha kwa-IEC ubhala into yokokuba ndingowasenyosana administrative area elusikisiki. U-IEC uthetha ngaloo nto. So aba bantu bavelayo umntu uvela vele nje ebhalise ubunguphinde samka but i-administrative area ingaveli xa uthethwa ngee-addresses. Andazoba niyandivana ke xa uthetha ngee-address kuthethwa ngantoni kanye kanye kanye. I-voters roll against i-voting district I think yile ndigqiba ukuthetha ngayo into ethi if ndirejistarishe kwi-voting district engu-EC 123 then ndizawuvota u-EC 124 ingaba kule game ndinalo na ilungelo lokuvota kulo area ku-EC 124 kanti bekufanele into yobande ku-EC 123 funa ndi-clarity so that xa you know mos sizi-politicians and ke sine-role esidlalayo le nto yovota education ukuncedisana no-IEC sikwazi ukuyitolika sibe idanganye. She i-ballot paper I think still have a challenge yofumanise umntu yoba ezinye iipartis mo especial ezizihluma ngokwamagowala asandukuvela. Yabona umzekelo ezawuthetha ngeepati ezimbini nindixolele kuba nibhilonga kwezo parties. Ndizawuthetha mna kandizazi uba ndibhilonga kodwa ke ndixolele uba ndizawuthetha umntu ndizawuthetha ngepati yakhe angakhathazeki. Umzekelo i-African National Congress
AIC. Kwi ballot paper nihla ngoba nizibeke zibe sendaweni enye. Ufumanise into ba ivoti ze ANC zithathwa kakhulu ngaba because abantu bakuthi abafundanga. Uvele kwawo ANC lokube nzima ukumbiza. Ndinitheni nixolele kuba ngichaphazele i-political party zenu. And belong nakwenye kwezizimbini. Ufumanise intoba aba be-IEC ngenxa yentoba amakhehlekazi akuthi nam ke ndibhideke ndithi xa ndibizwe ANC ndithi AIC kanti bendifuna ukuthi ANC niqaphele nangoku loo nto ingaba ndisazawusebenzisa laa nto beni to identify eyokuqala ipart okanye ngasebenzisa i-alphabetical nto ndiyayifuna iclarity kuloo nto so that xa sisiye ebantwini okanye sizii-political parties general khe ijongwe le nto ye-ballot paper iyasenzakalisa amaxesha amaninzi. Umzekelo nje kulo maxesha amaninzi enzekayo phawula into yoba i-IEC ayikho eJohannesburg, ayikho eLimpopo, ayikho eMpumalanga, kodwa aba ba i-IEC izawufumana ivoti pha ngenxa yale nto yokuba ungakwazi ukubiza le nto ethi sesithi AIC because awukwazi kaloku uhlala phaa ezilalini. Niqala kuphele kule game kwenzela uba kungabikho abantu abazawuthatha ivoti zabantu bantu abakule nto sikuyo. Abantu bazibone sebefumene ivoti ngenxa yezinye iipati kuba abantu bengakwazi ukubiza amagama. Enkosi Sihlalo. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Chairperson. These two honorable members also I'm going to end in Pambo. I have covered my question because Mina is staying in Limpopo. Everybody knows that Limpopo is becoming growing economically by the day. More especially into what the Feta Home has stayed because of the mining houses and the Masina area. Most of the people just have this up and down movement. Like she's indicated about these informal settlements whereby people, today you find them here, next time you find them there. What is the best way that you can assist us in terms of tracking the whereabouts of these people? Because most of the time, we careless. We don't consider, like in marriage, number two, in marriage, we get married. Like Onukusamke said it, I stay in what, 10, but we have 5 voting stations. Are you saying I am accommodated to vote in any, for example, where I stay is the Pala Primary School. I'm registered to vote at the Pala Primary School. But I get married next to Chiso Senior Secondary School. Are you saying I am still accommodated even if I don't change my address? Because both voting stations are located in one ward. The worst disadvantage, provincially and nationally we vote on the same day. It means if I have not furnished my address, I have a disadvantage of not voting provincially, but I'll vote nationally. Assist us guys, because you're going to this thing of ups and downs. I don't know how best are we going to manage this process. Thank you very much.
No, I'm fine, Honorable Chair, but just briefly, I wanted to ask the IEC leadership why this bill is only coming now. That's the simple question I want to ask. Because you know why I'm asking that question. 3 months ago, we were interacting with the IEC. It's not the first time that we are coming to the committee. We asked the simple question. And then at that time, we were also dealing with the political funding party bill, party political funding bill. We also worked for the IEC. There was no bill that was coming. We were not expecting it. Now, we are on the verge of rising for recess on the eve of an elections, which you say you are ready. But there's a bill that is coming. When did you anticipate that we are going to have a bill? And then now that it is coming,
are you expecting us to finalize it before the end of the term? Or are you saying to us we can leave it so that it must be inherited by the next administration that is going to come? So those are the simple issues. Otherwise, in terms of the bill, the clauses, I think they're straightforward and I'm covered. No, thanks.
Thank you.
Honorable
Hutchin.
Thank you, Chair. Is there something that I missed? And I don't know whether it was perhaps explained, but I don't understand it. And that is the amendment of Section 8 by the Bill Section 7, in which a person who is normally residing in a ward have now the option to, there may be 10 VDs in a ward, and to handpick where he or she wants to register. I'd like to see, to understand the real rationale behind that. And will it not distort it? Why should people now, and also to check up, a ward may be stretched over 30 kilometers from one VD to the other. I know where I live, there are two rural wards, and to travel from one point to the other is about 30 kilometers. So it's very difficult to know who should be registered at, say, VD1 and who not. If a person comes from, claims that I lives in VD12 and now goes to the right opposite side, 30 kilometers away, register there, I don't understand the rationale behind it, and doesn't it make it open it up for further manipulation? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
That's only, obviously we're not entitled to deliberate on the bill. We can only ask questions for clarity, and that's a clarity question. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, honourable members, for your inputs on the two presentations. Just to add few from my side, but also start by recommending the good work done so far. In two years, in terms of getting addresses of voters, it is commendable. You've done well so far, even though you still have those that are still outstanding. Mine are few, some were covered by the members. Honorable Stork, we did ask the question, why are we pressured now about the bill? Didn't you know that there is a bill coming? According to, they raised issues, it was state law advisors, it was the DM was here every time. It was the IEC, all the stories. You remember, we took a stance in the NCOP that anything that will come after July, because we don't want to rubber stamp, and we don't want to pay that. According to the deputy minister, he said it must be approved before
we rise.
But from where I am sitting, it's not impossible, not because we don't want. We don't want to falter. We don't want to be challenged as the NCOP, because we're doing this on behalf of the NCOP. We still have to follow all the legal requirements. We don't have a bill as yet. We're just being creative. NA is still going to present it in the House. I am told it's Thursday. If they finalize it on Thursday, it might be referred. On Friday, we have a sitting the whole day. If we will see it, we'll see it next week. Then if it comes to us next week, if we'll still be here, depending on what you agreed in the WIPARI meeting, if you agree that we are rising this Friday, we'll not be here. But if you have made provision that we are here next week, we can sit as a committee, get a briefing from the IEC formal now, then we do a public hearing, which will take us 14 working days. That is 3 weeks. If you take 14 working days, it takes 3 weeks. Then it means that it will be the third week of December. We'll not be here by that time. We can only come back January.
Which means that what the deputy minister is saying in reality, I don't know, she said they will speak where decisions are taken, I don't know where is that, but from where I am sitting, the compromise that we can make as a committee is that come back in January, because they will not be able to finalize the registration. Is it registration? What is it that you cannot do before you approve the bill?
Chair, in terms of the timelines, we're having a registration weekend at the end of Jan, mm-hmm. and immediately thereafter there's an expectation that the President will proclaim the election, by which time we need to publish the timetable, and the timetable is impacted by some of the amendments.
The President cannot proclaim the date until we finalize this. But then it means, Honourable Dog, the compromise that we can make as a committee is to come back second or third week of January. But even if we do, you still need Parliament, the NCOP, to sit to finalize the bill. It doesn't end here. We can do our part as a committee, but it still depends on the entire NCOP, which I don't see the NCOP coming back before SONA. So we may want to do miracles, but it's practically impossible. I was trying to respond because we spoke about it early. I wanted to find out from the department where was the delay from the IEC, from the state law advisors, where was the delay? So we had that information. Okay, just to add on from my side, the stamping of ID, I fully agree with you. You can stamp even if you do. Immediately you leave, I clean my ID. It's very easy to clean it. But what are the implications? Are there chances that people may vote twice because the ID is not stamped? What are the provisions made to make sure that the initial stamping, the reason for initial stamping is mitigated? Okay, they've spoken about the informal settlement. I also do want to say some parties, most of their voters are there, like Honorable Samga, that she does not belong to any party. But I know that some parties, most of their voters are there. I did not understand Izimbacweni, Honorable Mpambo. I also want to understand what is Izimbacweni, so that maybe...
Imbacu, kabantu aba, and yes, English, koda, I think the refugees, bafike bagxumeke ityodlombe labo kule ndawo ikholisa bona akukhathali noba kusemxhophozweni.
Abasiyi ma-South Africans. They are not South Africans.
Abanye babo batshate nabantu balapha e-South African for citizenship and then ke ngoku bala ikawubezi yinkulu lo yinkulu imbato kula khayelitsha. Go,
it's fine. I'm raising this because we need each and every voter. We need each and every voter, whether married to a foreign national or South African, as long as they are South African. I'm talking about a situation whereby you find that our people, even though we don't have that much of formal migrant workers, but in a reality, we still have. Most of our people, because even if it is a holiday, the election, the voting day, is only one day. People will not take my province, Mpumalanga. I'm working in Gauteng or in the Eastern Cape, in the Western Cape. I cannot go home for just one day. I would rather be in around where I'm working. We're just raising maybe in the future. As much as we are allowed to vote at the national level, but do our people know that? Because most of them, they know that I cannot vote because I'm not at home where I'm used to vote.
to what extent do we intensify our voter education to ensure that people are aware of that? But at the same time, it's unfortunate because we're still using the manual voting, the papers. But I think if it was an electronic voting, you could be able to be picked up in a system. But I'm just raising for the future that we need each and every voter. You can do it for now in a form of voter education. As we are here, we indicated that we're from different provinces. I want to be honest with you, I don't feel voter education. You're talking about you have done voter education. I don't know, maybe it's me who's missing voter education, or voter education is missing me. In my constituency offices, which is not in the place, in the ward where I'm staying, I never heard of any voter education by the IEC. Never. Where I am, there are three wards. Three. I don't know where it happened or I missed it. In my ward now, where I am residing, I never heard of voter education. Where is this voter education happening? I'm really missing it. I hear that you are doing it, but I'm missing it. And we do need it, especially I wanted to check these changes that we're making on the bill. Are they things that our voters need to know about them? Are there material changes that will require that all voters are aware of them so that they don't miss on the voting, which is their right? Strategy for youth. Our young voters are very few. Is there a special focus that we are putting forth to ensure that we get young people to vote? It's very important because they are our future. The more the voter for young people decline, where I heard in some of our constituencies where we belong, that the young people who are voting, maybe let me ask you a question. In the past years, are we increasing in getting young people to vote or are we declining? How is your youth vote? Is it increasing? Is it declining? Because that will tell us on what strategies we must come up with to get the young people to vote. I'm not sure expansion staff. What informs these numbers? I see in all your staff thing, Mpumalanga has got the list, including on the disabilities. What informs the numbers? I'm from Mpumalanga, must know why numbers for your expansion staff is the list of your numbers. Why? But more importantly, I want to know about people with disabilities. What informs the numbers? Do you have a total number of people with disabilities in different provinces? Does the number of staff that you are deploying there responding to the numbers that you have in terms of people with disabilities? Can I allow you to respond on those issues?
Thanks very much, members. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start with a couple of responses and then hand over to my fellow commissioner and to the CEO and Deputy CEO. But maybe I just wanted to start with a couple of things, one that you've touched on. First of all, in relation to the urgency or the timing, I think that we can only identify what our role has been, and that is to have provided a draft bill to the department, as is the way in which it is supposed to happen, in April of this year. And clearly then there are various processes that must unfold, but it's not possible for us to really, you know, that's not a process that we are in charge of. But I think that you had further explanations from both the Deputy Minister and other people who are here. The second issue that I wanted to speak on, and I'm sure that there will be other components of that response, is relating to people who are in informal settlements and who are moving, you know, for various reasons. I mean, some of the reasons are, as you've indicated, because of job opportunities and health and so on, and others, frankly speaking, if there's a fire, you know, those are other reasons why people have to move. So I think that, you know, broadly speaking, the issues that we are dealing with in terms of addresses are, first of all, mindful of those issues, and it's certainly things that we have placed before the court, which is why, for example, we provide now a space when we ask people to come to indicate where they stay, for them to give a description, right, which must happen. But it's true that having indicated that, it might be, for example, if there's a tragic situation like a fire, that somebody who was giving a valid description has then had to move. And some of those things we might be able to cope with, and some of them we genuinely might not because of a lack of desire. But I don't want you to believe that it's not very much in our thinking. It's very foremost in our thinking, and it's certainly been what we have indicated to the court is something that we've had to deal with. The second thing that relates to that, of course, is, as the Honourable Member was asking, well, what happens if somebody comes to a voting station and is on the roll, so therefore is a South African citizen who should be entitled to vote, but refuses to provide an address? Well, if a person refuses to provide an address but they're a South African citizen, they can clearly vote in the national election. But we can't allow that person to vote in a provincial election because which province? Okay, so I think what would prevail in those kind of circumstances would be the fact that somebody would be able to then vote in the national election but not the provincial election. But in relation to the second, or a question that you and some of you of the other members referred to, which is this issue about a voting district rather than a ward, or a ward rather than a voting district. I mean, the issue is as follows. The political component that we are dealing with in terms of the will of the people is at the level of the ward. The voting district is, as you rightly point out, an administrative capacity. But it's an administrative capacity that also is something that should not get in the way of somebody being able to exercise their vote. So our hope would be that people pitch to the correct voting district where they registered, which is nearest to where they stay. But what will happen if there's a fire and somebody has had to move? Well, it's not as significant, obviously, in the sense of if they are in the same province, as it would be in a local government election where things are a lot tighter. But what it means is that we want to ensure that that segment of the voters' roll speaks to the ward, and that the fact that you then point out that there could be concerns, is this the person with the right ID who's coming, picture the same as the ID? Well, that is part of the training, and I think it's important that you are again raising it here, but it is part of the training, and part of the training that we not only have been attempting to pick up on, but will continue to do that. So I don't want to, on the one hand, not recognize that we're talking about a process where we are expecting training to play a very important role, and I'll come back to that issue because the chairperson has raised it. But I think what's important is that we maximize opportunity for people to vote in the right place, but also for parties to be comfortable that the right people are voting in the right place. And that's the combination of systems
on the one hand and training on the other. And so on that note, Chairperson, before handing over to my colleagues, I wanted to come to the issue of training. Training and voter education more broadly. You know, it's something that obviously is ongoing, and as we're now moving into the phase of preparing for the more detailed process of the elections, more voter education material, not, I must say to you, Honourable Member, not only in English, voter material in all of the different languages, is at the moment in its sort of final stages of preparation and will be increasingly made available. Having said that, as you will all know, all of the different platforms that have been outlined do not mean that the people who in your particular constituencies you believe would benefit well, and even yourselves, Honourable Members, should you believe that it will be helpful for you to have some kind of very detailed engagement with us about what should happen in the voting station, we are more than willing to provide that kind of information to you, but also through you to people who you will direct to us, and we will then tell them, well, the next training process that is happening in an area close to wherever your country is on such and such a day, and we hope that people who you believe will benefit will be able to actually access that. But certainly for yourself, because that detail will be important, you'll be asked about it. We have indicated to your colleagues also in the when we were meeting with the Deputy Speaker of the National Assembly, when we were at the FIST meeting, the institutions for supporting democracy, that we are more than willing to provide that training to any public representative to help us to carry it forward. So we are in your hands when it comes to that. I'm going to ask on various issues, maybe let me ask firstly the CEO and the Deputy CEO, and then my colleague, the Commissioner, will wrap up with any additional comments.
Just before you proceed, I just want to, taking from the responses, this is not just questions. This is a committee where you belong. Some of the questions comes as suggestions for improvement. It's not about answering to pass or to go through the committee. This is your home. This is your home.
Thanks.
Where there are gaps, try to, the questions, take them as suggestions to you. I thought I should raise this because it's not going to help us just to ask questions, get responses, and we go. This is your committee. This is your committee. So take it like that. Yeah.
Chair, thank you very much, and I think we welcome that comment. We'll treat it as such. The issue about the order is that order number 2, Roman figure 2, says, in this report, the Local Commission must set out a means by which it proposes to, Roman figure 2, require voters with incomplete, adequate, or no addresses who wish to vote to supply their addresses before voting on voting day. So the order contemplates the fact that we won't have all addresses of everybody by voting day, but that any such persons would have to furnish an address or sufficient particulars before they vote in terms of that, that order. Now, the issue of ward vis-a-vis VD, yes, it is true that some VDs are quite expensive and some wards are quite expensive. The we don't anticipate prejudice because a ward is the political entity of contestation. The contest is at a ward level and not at the VD level. And because a VD is purely an administrative entity, as Commissioner Lau said, the political entity of contest is the ward. And nobody can register outside of the ward. Everybody must be registered inside of the ward, because once people go outside of the ward, they can skew things in wards in which they don't have a natural interest, because they're not ordinarily resident therein. But inside of the ward, we are opening the scope for voters to decide wherever they wish to be registered. And then the issue of whether a person would be able to vote in a place other than where they're registered, that remains as part of our law in terms of Section 24A. The difference being that if you vote inside your province and you have a proof of registration, then you can receive both ballots. But if you're outside, you only receive one ballot, which is the national ballot. And I'm saying this mindful of what the chairperson said in terms of us investigating possibilities for the future to deal with this issue. The issue of the sequencing of parties on the ballot, and in more more specifically the ANC AIC, the commission is seized with the matter. We are investigating possible configurations of distributing the sequencing so as to avoid the pitfall that the member has complained about. So once the investigations are done and complete, the commission will make a determination, and that will be communicated via the PLC structures and even the committee if so required. In respect of the youth, with every registration weekend, what we are observing is that the number of new voters who are registering are actually young persons between ages 29 and below. But we are coming off a very low base with the registration of young persons. Even as they register in bigger numbers now, the base is low, so their underrepresentation on the voter's roll continues. Commissioner Love did indicate that on the 10th of January, we will be launching a new communication campaign. We'll be launching the election with a new communication campaign. And the focus of that campaign is youthful. It's got a swag.
Cool.
It's cool. So don't feel, when you see that campaign, don't feel that we are not accommodating you. There's a philosophy behind it. We're trying to speak to a particular person. So it's cool, it's got swag and so on. It's precisely part of the structure. Secondly, we're going to be huge on social media, Instagram, Twitter, and so on and so on, because that's where young people converse and so on. So Mr. Hassing, if we miss you on Twitter and Instagram, it's not to undermine your participation. It's just that we want your grandchildren in. Okay, then there's the issue of an address in a rural context, because we are the first ones to admit that our definition of a complete address is event biased. in a sense that it's a house number or F number, voting street name and a suburb. Mm. Now those obtain in urban settings. But if you are from Limpopo, Memampuru would know that if you are from Hadikali, for instance, there can be a stamp number, stamp 24, Marovala village, Hadikali. That is a complete address. You can never get any better than that in a rural context. So that work of redefining what a complete address is currently underway, so as to take account of villages as well as farms, because the configuration of a complete address in a farm context is also different. That we are dealing with.
But on that, I know we got things like I say number 76 years ago.
Yes.
Now that section is expanded. We have got a list of houses without numbers. What do we do? Now this person say by the same number staying in Jerusalem doesn't help.
Okay, let me just before you answer, let me also add on farms. Farms is a privately owned property. I may be working in a farm. You know, farm workers, they usually address the farm owners with the nickname. Me, I grew up in a farm, Gantaga. I never knew his formal name. That was not his formal name. I only learned when I was old that, oh, it was Gali. I don't know what was it. Whether Kali was the name or the surname. And that information of F number, or farm number, farm workers may not have that information. How do they get the addresses? I'm talking farm workers now.
Chair, on that specific one, historically, how we've approached the compilation of the voters' rolls, that the commission has always been acutely aware of those difficulties, and as a result, it used a VD map instead of focusing on a particular description of an address. A VD map is an equalizer because a person only needs to indicate that they can identify a place where they reside in that VD map. And if you can be able to work it out that place belongs in that VD, the CEO has a basis upon which to allocate or assign that person's registration against that VD. If this is something we need to revisit in light of an address having been promoted to almost a condition precedent to free and fair elections. Mm-hmm. We have introduced a additional form for registration, specifically in those settings, an RECAS form. It's almost an affirmation statement to say you can provide a conventional address, but we are however able to make a determination that the place at which you reside, whether it is described properly or not, we can locate it within a specific ward, and therefore that forms the basis on which we register you against that ward. The same will also apply to informal settlement, because to insist on a formal address in those circumstances will be to arbitrarily limit the right of citizenship and the enjoyment of political rights.
Okay.
Just two other issues which I picked up, but there might be ones that we missed. One was to do with the ballot paper, the sequencing, and the other you mentioned maybe of thinking about electronic voting, and just then I'll ask the commissioner just to wrap up on that.
And the number of what
informed
number of people
who
are
calling? Okay, thank you. Thank you for reminding me. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think my colleagues have answered all of the questions except for those that are left. Let me start with the numbers thing whilst we remember. The numbers are based on the statistics for the province. For example, we will say in this area how many people do we have and how many people do we allocate based on those numbers, how many facilities of stations, and we look at the distance and all of that. There are formulas that are used and they are applied in those instances to the relevant provinces. The issues relating to complexities as well may be taken into consideration from time to time to be sure that we cover the numbers fairly adequately. But this is not a thing that is done by colleagues sitting in the office. People walk in those areas, inform the complexities, and we determine the numbers accordingly. I think there were issues raised.
Chairperson, in relation to that, you asked about the issue of disability. There is work around disability, which the commissioner will comment on.
Okay. In relation to issues of disability, we do three things. One, we work with organized bodies of persons living with disabilities to be sure that we brief them, that we understand what challenges they face and where they have the greatest need. In other words, we will have to allocate a lot of people there who will understand blindness, for example. And that we do. But we also take into consideration that there may be people in the communities that we need to accommodate. But particularly where there are facilities, we will make an arrangement as well to deal with those facilities. The second thing I think that is important is that we brief them. We brief people with disabilities or living with disabilities. They are organized bodies about our preparations for elections. In these discussions, then come our issues. Sometimes they're very difficult issues. Sometimes they're issues we quickly meet with each other and we come to a common purpose and we deal with that. I do not want to understate or overstate the fact that there are challenges we face. One of those challenges is that the Electoral Commission owns no infrastructure. We use community infrastructure where people live, where they, you know, they are every day. But we do augment those to the extent that we can with facilities to accommodate. In some instances, it is possible to do everything. In others, there are limitations. But we will continue to work on that. There was an issue raised, and I think it's important to point out. Honorable Hutting raised the issue of party agents and how they do their work effectively. And I just want to remind this committee that in the elections in 2016, when we came here, and it was directly after the clockwork issues had arisen, we presented amendments germane to functions of party agents at the station, and those will apply. There is nothing in here to deal with that because we've already dealt with it previously. I also want to raise the issue that we've dealt with the numbers. The stamping of the ID, and the chairperson has stepped out. It's an issue of defacing the smart ID document. If you came with a smart ID document and we said the law says we must stamp it, one, stamping it on the surface does not help it. Somebody's got to be able to write or read from it electronically. And I'm afraid if we do so, the security is gone. So the law is to deal with that. But that does not or will not compromise the fact that persons will still be able to vote only once. There are still party agents, we still mark off the voter's roll, we still mark your finger. Those things we will keep, and they are still pertinent. There was a last issue that I thought, yes. My colleague has dealt with it, but I'll just, the issue of sequencing who is on the ballot and, you know, whether a party with this name and another with that name are close to each other. It's a matter, as my colleagues have indicated, that the commission is looking at. But there are a number of options we have. One is to look at random sequencing of the names of the parties, except that we need to find a starting point. And to be sure that even with random sequencing, we do address some of the concerns that have been raised in here. I think we should make the point clear that once a political party is registered, as are the parties currently registered, we will not be able to say to a party, your logo must be changed tomorrow before we go to an election. We will manage it to the best of our abilities from where we are, having had the concerns that you are raising. The last issue that I thought I should deal with is that the question, Chairperson, you raised of persons who find themselves away from their place of ordinary residence, let's just say that, on election day, and the possibilities of electronic voting and this and that and the other. This commission has consulted extensively previously. It even convened in this city a national meeting with international experts on electronic voting without saying to parties, this is what we need to do. We looked at all of the options, brought the countries that have had electronic voting, those that still have, and those that had and have not removed it, because there are. And they informed all of us. And out of that consultation, parties were unanimous that we should continue to look at these things, but we are not at that point. To the extent that people who, and you know, people travel in this election coming next year, we have indicated that persons who are registered on the voter's roll with addresses, if they are within their province, we will, in terms of Section 24A, provide them the opportunity to vote in their province as well as for the national, in the national election. But persons who don't have addresses or are outside of their province will regrettably only be able to vote for the national election. I think that covers the issues that we're outstanding. I'd like to thank everyone.
Okay. No.
Thank you very much, honourable members. I think that concludes the presentation from the IEC. We will be waiting for the bill, but like I've indicated, we will follow the processes. State law advice and parliamentary advisors, law advisors, anything you want to say about the law now, the bill. Is there anything we can do to shorten the process? As the Deputy Minister was saying, it must be approved before we to go to, before what? Okay, before we go on the stage, before we rise, is there anything we can do?
Not at this stage, Chair, because the rules of Parliament are clear, Chair, as to what Parliament should do, Chair. Well, now the NCOP has to have initial briefing and then publication of the bill and then public hearings and then deliberations. those are contained in the rules of parliament, Mr. Chair. We cannot amend them at this stage. Yeah. Thank you.
And just to add, Chairperson, that the consultation process that has to take place is the constitutional requirement, which cannot be circumvented, unfortunately.
Thank you very much. That's where we are. We'll try our best, but as indicated earlier, it doesn't end at the committee level, it ends at the NCOP level. Our members, we have three sets of minutes that we want to quickly approve. If she goes over here, yeah. That we want to approve.
Chairperson, would it be in order for us to be released? Thank you so much. Thank you to you and all the members. Thank you.
Okay, the first set of minutes is 23 October. Anything on page one? Page 2? Anything on page 2? You have the minutes, all members. Page 3 and page 4. Can I have a move for adoption? Honorable Mamukulu move. Any seconder? Honorable Mshodi seconds. And then the 6th of November, page 1. Anything on page 1? On page 2. Yeah. Page 3. Anything on page 4? And page 5. Can I have a mover? Honorable Stoke and Honorable Hutton seconds. And then the last set of minutes is on the 13th of November. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4, page 5, and page 6. Can I have a mover of adoption of the minutes? Honorable, should we be there?
Honorable Stoke.
I've got a good story to tell. Honorable
Hutton, seconding. Thank you very much. There is an annual report. Do you want? We can't approve it today. Do you want? No. Yeah. There is an annual report that I will request members to look at it if you feel that there is something missing. Or comment on the report, we can forward our comments to Marcel. And also there is a legacy report and the 5-year report. Can we look into those two documents and make comments on them? Honorable members, Oh, yeah, the negotiating mandate. Honourable members, let me apologize. we were supposed to have a negotiating mandate today, but we got a request from Northern Cape that we postpone to give them an opportunity. We are compelled to do so. In Eastern Cape. It's Northern Cape and Eastern Cape. So we gave them an extension, meaning that we'll consider the finalize the bill next year.
When we come.
Napisa. In fact, it was not.
Kept serial offenders.
We were not going to finalize it anyway. Okay.
I'm raising the question from the chairperson.
Okay.
Because you have requested an extension.
Yes.
Based on the fact that we're going to still be dealing with the IEC bill, is it possible that it is included?
For the IEC bill?
I think we'll be given an opportunity to continue with the IEC bill.
Okay.
Based on extension that your province has requested, is it possible that when we conclude the IEC bill, it will be part of it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I will check on that also. I think it's a good point.
When it comes, because we have not yet received, when it comes, we'll take it. But all what she says, honourable members, the meeting is then adjourned. Other things you can discuss outside the meeting.
I can not have the decision to what election time. No,
I'm not going to be able to do that.